The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
They tried to colonize us, tried to genocide us, yet we're still here with the tongue unbroken.
Was will the Katjuhan was auch to ye ke ya ke iti, kabuchin hasati ya ye gi. Tech would the good the cotlut ayayata. Was auch to was a good litzin etu ye ti. Gunnel cheesh. Thank you all for being here. This is The Tongue Unbroken. I'm so glad we're together. I'm so glad you're listening to this. Welcome back. If this is the first time you're checking us out, welcome. Check out the other stuff we've been doing, talking about. And if you've been listening, this a lot of what we're trying to do here is decolonization. So if you're on board with decolonization, you're going to enjoy some of the stuff that we're talking about today. If you're not sure what decolonization is, then you'll just keep listening. We're going to talk about this stuff. Sometimes we're going to break some of these things down, like the specifics of what is colonization, what is coloniality, what is decolonization, what is decoloniality, what's hegemony, all these different things. Because they all play a role in the future of Native American languages. And we are all about maintaining the same number of languages that were here, which sometimes takes a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of change. So if you're not sure, just keep trying. You have parts that are probably deeply ingrained in you and that you have been that have been planted through the educational systems to get you to resist some things like this. And you might even think, someone's trying to keep me from doing something. Someone's trying to take something away from me. And, you know, there might be some truth to that. Because what's being taken away is concepts of supremacy. Because supremacy cannot exist on this continent without genocide. You just can't have one without the other. And so it's like a fulcrum. And a lot of things I try to not think in terms of like one thing or the other, but sometimes there are some situations where, you know, someone's got their foot on someone's neck. And you can't just have your foot on someone's neck and expect everyone to be okay with that. So I am going to be proposing here that we decolonize everything. Everything. Especially public institutions and education. Education is such a powerful tool in America. It creates a lot of problems when it comes to Native American histories, Native American ideologies, Native American languages, because they're often just not truly part of what's being taught to people. And so, if educational systems have not fully examined themselves with an intention to decolonize, they are probably agents of destruction and agents of genocide and oppression. So, to move away from that, we're going to have some conversations about what it specifically takes to get out of that. Because it takes people doing different things. It takes people constructing different systems. A lot of educational systems are rotten at the core because they are rooted in these concepts of supremacy, which some people hate. Some people hate to hear this because it challenges some of the notions that they're comfortable with. A lot of people are comfortable with supremacy, and they are comfortable with annihilation of Native American peoples, because if there's no annihilation, that means we have to be in the room, we have to be in the systems, we have to be in whatever everybody else is in. And that's what we're looking for, because we remain. We were here, we are here, we will be here. And today, we're going to have two special guests who are working on a language that went to sleep. And we're going to use the term sleep, because sometimes you do lose the last of your speakers. This is something that's going to happen across North America, and we have to be ready. So sometimes we have to be ready to say, no, we're not going to allow that to happen. Sometimes we have to be ready to say, boy, we're coming close. We need to make sure that doesn't happen. And sometimes we're going to have to say, okay, that has happened, and we're not extinct. Extinct is a colonizer's term. I remember someone wrote an article about a language gathering. And in this language gathering, there are folks who said, we're not extinct, please don't call us that. And they wrote an article and they said that. I was like, you were there, you heard them, you heard them. I wrote to the author who denied what I was trying to tell them. He tried to say, well, according to some stupid standard or some stupid thing, this is what the term is. And no. So people who have been oppressed and people who have been victims of what colonization has done. And so we're talking about all kinds of people. All kinds of people. We're talking about ethnicities, races, genders, sexual orientation. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. They have the right to define themselves. They have the right to define what's safe for themselves. And they have the right to exist in comfort without having to try to not be themselves. So, in future episodes, we're probably about halfway done with this season. So we're going to keep trying to extend this and keep trying to do more. This is a wonderful work to just have conversations with people about this kind of stuff. But at some point, we're going to go over the story of how Alaska Native languages became co-official languages in Alaska. Because there's some weirdness to it. There's some violence to that story. There's some, you know, some things that emerged that I think we need to talk about. And that's good to just sort of put on the table. But today we're going to celebrate Mary Peltola, the first Alaska Native in Congress, and a powerful, wonderful Alaska Native female voice. For now, we're going to listen to our guests. We're going to have a conversation. I'll pop in at the end to wrap this one up. Gunashchish, so glad you're here. Keep going. Keep being strong. Keep doing the good stuff. If you're not doing the good stuff, look at yourself. Look at what you can be doing right now. You could be a change agent. You could be a positive force in your community that helps people survive and thrive and live and come back to places of strength. And one last thing about being an educator and doing this type of work. I've been trying to think of some terminology that I think helps. Because sometimes you have people, like let me get to the definitions, right? I don't like to label people a whole lot, but I also sometimes have problems because there's certain people that I have worked with where they have said things in meetings, and sometimes they've been administrators, sometimes they've been faculty members, and they have said, decolonization is totalitarianism. And then they talk about how academic freedom is threatened by decolonization, which at the core is all about inclusion. It's just saying, if you're teaching at a place where these people are, you have to include those people in the content. You cannot exclude them from the content. And that means you have to go to their voices and have their voices be heard. So some of the folks who do this stuff, and it gets complicated because some people will be against decolonization and will be actively creating atmospheres of discrimination against Indigenous peoples in their classrooms and in their work. So those are not colleagues. I started to say colleagues. Well, I've got these colleagues. And I thought about that word, and that word just seemed very nice, like we were somehow on this same sort of team. And I'm not trying to go against them, but I'm moving them out of the way. I'm like, okay, if that's what you're thinking, you got to get out of the way. Because your mode of thinking, if you start saying things like genocide is the wrong word for Native Americans to use to describe their own experiences and their own histories, that mode of thinking is like expired old milk, been in the fridge too long, starting to curdle. And you need to reboot your operating system. You need to update some of those files because it's an outdated mode of thinking that's rooted in supremacy. And supremacy is a huge myth, a huge lie. So enough of that. There'll be, well, not enough. More. But not more from me. More from our guest today. Gunachish, lekat Johan wasa achtu yek eyayagi. Ya achis chunkien, hastu in, yuch akwatan. Akawe achtu asugu ye achi etatawe hastu ye jene, ha hastu yuch atungi. Ah, train, shikatru yuch atungi kuustien, ha kudziti ya idet. Welcome, everybody. I'm so happy you folks are joining us. I hope you're having a wonderful day. And I'm excited to talk to with two new friends of mine and to talk about what's going on with their language. It's important for us to know that there are lots of indigenous languages in North America. There used to be lots. There are lots right now. They're all important. And it's important for us to learn about what's going on with folks in different parts of North America. So I am joined by Keith and Carell. And if you would like to introduce yourselves, and we're going to have a conversation about what you folks are doing, what's going on, what you might need, what's going to happen next, all kinds of exciting stuff. So go ahead and tell the people who you are. Gunchish.
Ulika Nawalamo, Keith Cunningham, Delawans. My name's Keith Cunningham. I am the linguist for the Nanticoke Indian tribe.
Ulika Nawal Nitap, Carell Delawans, Nantukoni. I'm Carell, and I am part of the Nanticoke Indian tribe. And very excited to be here today.
Fabulous. And where are you folks? What's your folks' land like? What's your language? What's going on? The East Coast is such a magnificent place of wonderful, rich indigenous peoples and histories that I think are sometimes overlooked, erased. So we want you to have a chance to tell us about your people and your language.
Well, we are a fairly small community in Delaware, in southern Delaware. So for any of you guys who have been out to the Delaware beaches, Rehoboth Beach, our tribal lands are a little bit inland from that. We also have a couple of sister communities, one in central Delaware and another one in South Jersey. And we're, you know, one extended family and but three separate political communities. And we have been here on this land forever, and they didn't push us off. We managed to stay against all odds and to keep our communities together and to keep our families together. And we're still out here today doing that.
That's amazing. And I got a lot of love and respect for people on the East Coast who felt the brunt of a lot of colonial forces for a longer period of time, and often in an incredibly violent way to try and displace people, get rid of people. And so in your folks' language work with what you're doing, what are some of, well, I want to talk about what are you folks doing first before we get into what's hard about it. So what's going on with your language? What kinds of things have you folks been working on, and how's it been going?
Well, you know, you're right. Our communities you were some of the earliest to experience those colonial invaders, right? So 1608 was actually when John Smith, the infamous John Smith, came and visited our community. And so we have been struggling through a lot of challenges since then. Our language has actually been sleeping for a while now. So we don't have any native speakers alive today. Our last speaker passed in the mid-1800s. And so what we're doing right now is we're waking that language back up. So We have some old archives that I'll let Keith tell you a little bit more about the details of how you even take these old books and, you know, help to, you know, reawaken the language from that. But our communities are really making that push right now to bring that language back, put it in the mouths of our children, and to put it in the mouths of the elders and the adults and every single person. We're all starting off at the beginning, but we're all really excited to bring that language back. And the children of tomorrow and for the next several generations are going to have this language.
It's incredible. Sheesh, for all that work, for having the courage to step forward and to do that. We talk a lot in our region about these kind of three different terms that we use. We say language stabilization is if you got a lot of speakers and you're just kind of trying to stay where you're at. And language revitalization means you don't have a lot of speakers and you're trying to create speakers so you can do stabilization. And then revival is you don't have speakers and you need to start creating new speakers. And it's wonderful and inspirational to hear that this can happen, that it is happening. I wish you all the very, very best as you folks are doing this work. And I guess, what are some of those challenges that you face and what are your strategies to overcome those challenges, to defy all the odds, which you are going to do and which you are doing?
So, you know, since Anantokoke were among the first to encounter colonists, and the language went dormant before we had things like tape recorders, IPA, or any other linguistic notation, what we have at our disposal are some very inconsistently recorded documents, which contain a little under 400 unique words. But fortunately, the Algonquian family as a whole is very closely related, and the individual languages, and particularly along the eastern seaboard, the eastern Algonquian languages, which comprise a genetic subgroup within the wider Algonquian family, are really more closely related to one another than, say, French or Spanish or Italian are related to one another. So even though we might not have a complete vocabulary of the language, we are able to draw inference from other better documented languages, ones that still have speakers, or ones that have gone dormant after we have already acquired appreciable numbers of recordings of them. And so what I'm doing with the language, I'm doing kind of the dirty work of language revitalization, which is taking these documents, trying to puzzle out their orthography, which, again, they didn't have IPA or anything of that sort. But I'm taking these words, meticulously finding cognates in these other related Algonquian languages. And fortunately, also, Algonquian does happen to be the best studied language family in the New World. And we do have, we already have several dictionaries of Proto-Algonquian. So a lot of reconstructive work has been done. And so my work has been, in addition to gathering cognates and looking at Proto-Algonquian, Proto-Eastern Algonquian, just trying to figure out, how did Nanticoke descend from the proto-languages, and how does it resemble neighboring languages, its other relatives? And with that, we can fill in a lot of the gaps that are in the documentation, thereby creating a working language again.
That's wonderful. And I enjoyed seeing you had cat that was crawling on your keyboard. So it was fun. I had to take my dog's toys away before we started this. And so we're just hanging out. We're chilling. We're just talking about language revitalization. We're talking about what's going on. So like, what kinds of things? What kinds of things are you making? What kinds of things are you doing? Who's your target audience for some of this stuff? I'm very fascinated to hear.
So one of the elders in our community, Raggy, had this idea, this vision, this dream that she could find a way to really bring this language to the children. We've had for the last decade or so, we've had some other elders in our community get together and work with some of those other speakers of sister languages. So they worked with a woman who is from the Anishinaabe people. And so those languages are sister or cousin languages to ours. And so they, alongside Keith, worked together to create a series of classes, mainly geared at adults or older children, to start to learn some of the vocabulary and grammar in. So we had like some classes that we did, a series of classes. But so Raggy wanted to find a way to bring it to the younger children that those, you know, they're our future and they're going to be the people taking our language into the future. And also something that people could have all the time, because due to, you know, we're all busy adults. Keith and I are both in graduate school right now. So, you know, we are very busy, but we wanted to, you know, create something that people could have all the time that they could access and learn at their own pace, in addition to the classes that we'll still be offering in the future. And so she had this idea of putting together a children's book in the language. And so that's actually what we've been spending most of the pandemic working on, because, you know, couldn't do anything else. So it's perfect for at least, you know, language work and being able, you know, since I wasn't able to do some of my other work and other research at the time, we could really dive into that language work and put this book together. And so we have a really great team of people who are working to make this a reality. So it's one of those introductory books that has colorful illustrations done by a very talented artist from our community, Paige. And we have this character, Grandmother Turtle, who takes everyone through the lessons. And she actually kind of reminds everybody of Raggy. She's modeled after this wonderful elder in our community who is also a storyteller. And so Grandmother Turtle, she teaches you greetings. The greetings that Keith and I gave at the beginning, those are in the books and we want everyone to learn them. There's also lessons on animals and colors and family members. And even within those lessons, there's also, you know, our own cultural teachings that are, you know, brought into that. So in the family section, for example, we tell them that our word for siblings and our word for cousins are the same thing in the language, because you know how our people are, like your siblings, your cousins, those are, you know, they're all your brothers and sisters. And so it's there in the language.
Same.
Yes. Exactly. So, you know, some of those things are in there. We have, you know, a section about giveaways and why those are important. And so, you know, also they learn the words for gift and they also learn that teaching of, you know, what giveaways are about and the sort of generosity that is sort of embedded in our cultures.
Wow, that is beautiful, because you have children who will be learning this as a new language, and you also have adults who will be learning this as a new language. And so as everybody sort of starts to bring it back, it's wonderful to think about these things that can fit for everybody. And I'm so happy you folks use the term sleeping. Like, I'm not happy that that's the state, but you know, I was at a language gathering here in Alaska that was, it was very strange. Like, so they wanted to bring our languages forward because we had made most of our Alaska Native languages co-official languages of Alaska. So they wanted to have a signing ceremony to kind of prop up this politician. So they reached out to me and said, could you get someone from, could you, and there was kind of a team of us. They said, could you guys get someone from every Alaska Native language to say, thank you, I'm so happy my language is an official language of the state of Alaska. And I said, well, that's something we'd never say in our languages. But I said, we could probably say something kind of close to that. But if you give people a chance to start speaking their language, they're going to say a lot more than that. So you better be ready for it. And they really weren't. And they were trying to get me to get everyone to be quiet. And I said, you brought us here to celebrate our languages. Now you want me to tell people to be quiet. You picked the wrong guy for that job. And so at one point, we have a language here, Eyak, which is a beautiful language just north of us, and they don't have any fully fluent speakers right now, as far as I know. There might be one or two, but they had sort of famously lost one of their last speakers in the 1990s, I believe. Maybe it was the early 2000s. Her name was Ann Smith, and people started using the word extinct to talk about their language. And a lot of us always felt like that's the wrong word to use. One, because if someone gets murdered, you don't, you know, it's different. And so there's these colonial forces that have annihilated and genocided indigenous peoples, or attempted to. And then also, like, the people are there, and we see languages that are bringing their languages back to use, bringing their languages back to life. And so the EAC peoples who came to this, they said, don't say we're extinct. We're not. We're right here. We're doing everything we can. We're trying to bring our language back. And there was some reporter who wrote an article and said, including the extinct language of EAC. And I reached out to that reporter. I said, hey, man, I was there. And they said, don't use that word. And you turn around and use that word. And then they tried to explain, well, according to something, something. I was like, it's not your place. And so I think it's important for Indigenous communities to define themselves, to define their own work, to set their own path. And I'm so happy to hear that this is what you folks are doing as you go forward. And so let's say someone else has a language that doesn't have any speakers. What's your advice on how do they get started?
Well, I would definitely tell them to think about what other resources do they have, because a lot of people, they get really, it's intimidating. It is. And it's a very daunting task, but it's not impossible. And so there might be old archive documents. There might be old recordings, you know, depending on when, you know, when their language was last spoken. So if we're talking like the last elders, you know, just recently passed, there may still be people who may not be fluent speakers, but they may know some of it. So go to them and start talking with them and working with them. And then, you know, for other communities that are similar to ours, and we are going on archive texts, also remember your own language families. There are so many languages, you know, all across North America and all across the rest of Turtle Island. And they all are related to somebody else. And so go find your neighbors, go find your cousins, your long lost cousins, your linguistic cousins, and, you know, see how you guys can help each other. So I think we just need to not think about it as these isolated communities bringing an isolated language back to life. It's not, it's more than that. You know, we do things by community anyway. And so reaching out across those communities for help and for resources, I think, is one way to go.
Amazing.
Also, one thing that I've really come to appreciate as I've been working on the Nanticoke language is that no matter how many generations have passed since the last speaker has walked on, that the culture is still alive and well, and the worldview, the values are still very much a part of the culture. And so the experience of reintroducing a language isn't so much teaching a foreign language so much as it is welcoming a relative home, even though someone may, even though the current generations of students may have never heard the language spoken before, there is still this intimate familiarity that they just kind of recognize. There's just this sense of familiarity with the language, even if they haven't spoken it. Once they learn how there are just certain ways of expressions, and I imagine Carole can probably speak a lot more about this than I can, but that's a really, I mean, it's just something just clicks when it's somebody reconnecting with their own ancestral language versus trying to learn a completely new paradigm. And that, I found that very moving as I gave my classes, where it's, I will just, as you know, coming to it as an outsider, I'd be explaining some things that are different from a kind of English background. And the reaction I got was more sort of like, oh, yes, of course, you know, that makes perfect sense that it should be this case, you know, whether it be, you know, animacy or you're not saying goodbye. It's like, I'll see you later. That's just, you know, a common way of, you know, it's never farewell. Everybody always reunites. And I found that very moving.
Yeah. And especially thinking, using that example of goodbye, realizing that in the Nanticoke language, they don't say goodbye. They say, I'll see you again, or I'll see you another time. I'll see you later, something like that. Growing up, all the elders in our family never used the word goodbye. They always would say later. And I remember as a kid very clearly getting yelled at by one of my great aunts because I would say bye to her because, you know, that's, I don't know, that's what all the other kids say to people. Like, and she was like, no, we don't do that. You know, don't say goodbye. It's bad luck is what she would always say. And she's like, say, I'll see you later. I'll see you again, because we always will see each other again. in this life or the next one. And so it's really exciting as I learn more and more about this language and as I'm learning more of it, how many things like that are embedded that were kept by the community, even if they passed into English. Like, we're using English words, but we're still expressing some of these same ideas.
Right. And I think it's important for folks to also realize, like, the level of reconstruction that also often has to happen in Native America. And so, like, with the amount of destruction that colonialism has done historically and continues to do by, you know, othering people and keeping them out of spaces and just generally just ignoring, like, whole nations and languages, often you have to put so much stuff back together. But some of the things that I think of is, we had an elder, his name is Kingisti David Katzik, and he used to always stand up to in front of classes and say, "Ituyeyeti hayuketangi, ituyeyeti." Our language is inside of you. It's inside of you. We're going to wake it up. We're going to bring this thing back. And then another elder, his name was Khajakte Walter Soboloff. He used to say, "Never forget this wonderful thing that was born on the world and that allowed our ancestors to survive." Because I think in order to survive as indigenous peoples, I think we need our languages. And for some of us, we're just going to try and get back everything that we can, little bits at a time. And so I'm so happy to hear what you folks are doing. And we're going to hear more about it. But first, we're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to some folks who have something we might be interested in, and hopefully it's a good thing. So, Gunashish, this is The Tongue Unbroken. We'll be right back.
What's happening, baby?
This colonization shit got you down. You gotta get on this decolonization groove, yeah. It's time for language revitalization all across North America. The land of the language coming back into the hands of future generations where it all belongs. Rise up and have your voices be heard. Defeat all the colonial forces that try to hold you down.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, "Oh, what's your best way of making money?" I'm like, "Oh, we should start some sort of scheme."
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, goodness sheesh. We are back. We're happy to be having this coast-to-coast conversation. So we brought the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean together for this conversation. So a lot of the work that I think happens in language revitalization is language planning. So for language planning, a lot of times when I go to Hawaii, I look at things and say, okay, this could be us 30 years from now. I'd always have to think, okay, we got to come up with like some kind of, and they would throw that number at us. And so Pila Wilson and Kawanoi Kamana and others had say 30 years, what's it going to be like 30 years from now? And so it was interesting because I'm not a very organized person. So sometimes trying to think of like 2 years from now is going to be difficult, but I'd say, oh, well, you know, it's going to be like 2050. What's going to happen in 2050 other than flying cars and rain all the time or whatever is in the movies, right? But I guess for what's your vision for what is going to happen with your language and how are you going to get there?
I think for so many of us, it's to have children born and speaking Nanakoke as their first language and growing up and still speaking Nanakoke as that first language, learning English because, you know, we all live in this world and we have to know it and work in it and deal with it. But having that language at home and in our communities. And so we go to community gatherings and everybody's speaking in the language. And, you know, each new generation, the kids coming up with new slang and, I don't know, jokes and songs in the language, you know, something that, you know, makes it fun and keeps it going. So that very broadly. And I have some ideas how to get there. I don't know whether that's the 30-year plan, the 50-year plan, the 150-year plan, but however long it takes, as long as we keep going and take a step forward each day, I think that, you know, they're going to get there. Those next generations, I don't know which one it'll be, but they will get there. But I think for us, I would love to see this book that we're creating. We're going to have it soon in the hands of hopefully as many people in our community as possible. We are going to create an online dictionary where people, it'll be an interactive dictionary where people are able to look up words and grammar and, you know, start to put together some of their sentences themselves. I would love to see some language nests as soon as we get enough people learning to speak the language well enough to create some of these language only spaces where we can work with, you know, different groups of people, you know, children or adults or, you know, small groups of people where we can really help to increase their fluency. And yeah, having our own schools again. We used to have our own schools in our communities, not in the language, of course, but, you know, just for our sort of community members. But having our own schools and facilities in the future where, you know, we can teach them math in the language, you know, we can teach real history in the language, you know, literature, government, politics, actual global studies. So I would love to see that as I know I've been looking around at, you know, all the people in Indian country who are doing some of these programs now and just really seeing what they're doing and how they're moving that forward. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what I can help and who I can inspire and pass it on to.
And it's sheesh. And yeah, we think about this stuff a lot just in terms of trying to see the, you know, getting this long range vision and then trying to figure out like, well, what are the pieces to really get there. And a lot of that takes just a lot of innovation, jumping outside the colonial boxes and creating some things. And sometimes you're creating stuff specifically for age groups. Like, so, okay, this is for kids. And so we need to get some stuff for the kids. This is for the adults. We got to get some stuff for the adults. And then once you start getting this critical mass of learners who can start to speak, then you start to think about creating community spaces. And so for us in Tlingit, we spent the summer doing some language immersion gatherings. And one of the things that we realized is we have a very large population, well, pretty large, you know, for us, we have a pretty large population here in Juneau, and Juneau is probably 30,000 people. And I'd say maybe 20 to 25% are indigenous. And so we're a pretty large part of the population, but we don't really have a space where we can gather specifically around our language. And so we have a lot of wonderful organizations who have developed spaces and purchased spaces and built, you know, buildings. But most of the times those are English speaking spaces, even though they are indigenous. And so we do a lot of partnerships with them, but then we realize, well, we need some spaces where we can just gather and have dinners and get together and basically a language house, because we had rented some through these different companies where you can sort of rent a house for a while. And I think there's a lot of land moguls who are involved with this stuff, and I don't think it's very healthy for communities in general. But we got like really bad reviews because we moved furniture around, we had a bunch of cars there, and it wasn't your typical have a little vacation type of thing. Like we had work to do. And so what we're going to try and figure out here is how do we acquire some spaces that are specifically for our language. So we can say, let's go to the language house. And once you cross that threshold, then you just leave your English outside. And we found that when we were living like that, it was a lot easier to speak, a lot easier to understand. But then we also have to get a lot of people ready for that, which is, you know, all these interlocking pieces. And so as you folks are doing this work, I'm so happy that you have neighboring languages that you can work with. I know what are some models that you're looking at that you're hoping to replicate in your work with your language?
So really my inspiration for the work I'm doing was Jesse Little Dobarrett's work with the Wampanoag language. So Wampanoag similarly did not have speakers of the language for several generations. And Jesse Little Dobarrett, working with the late Dr. Kenneth Hale, worked with resources such as the Elliott Bible and some native documents in Massachusetts to reconstruct the language. And so I'm using the same method, albeit with a smaller corpus to work from. And also, looking towards the future, you know, right now, as I mentioned, I'm kind of doing like the dirty work of the language revitalization with this sorting of orthography to phoneme correspondences and all that historical work. But you know, moving forward, I think, of course, pedagogy is the most important thing. Getting this reconstructed language back to the people. And I've learned, you know, certainly things like language camps and the like, and opportunities to actually use the language are certainly absolutely crucial to that. And I think as I've been studying the language, I'm looking at it through the lens of a linguist. So things like, you know, obviative or, you know, transitive, animate, and so forth. And that works well for me, but I find, you know, in a classroom setting, explaining these things like obviative, et cetera, using those terms, sometimes it just kind of draws a blank. And just kind of, you know, dissecting the language in that way, kind of like a taxidermy or, you know, or just kind of like a very forensic way of looking at the language, doesn't really help as much as just, you know, providing these opportunities to just kind of use it as a living language. Ultimately, the language is, you know, patterns and sound. It's learning the languages is pattern recognition. And so just, you know, getting those language camps started and have just all these opportunities to use language, I think that's really going to be crucial for getting the language back in communities. But so yeah, those are, you know, the Wampanoag example is one that I've very much I've learned a lot from their approach. I've studied a few other indigenous languages along the way. I did some Dinebizod, some Apsaloka, and they've all basically very similar. It is kind of creating the environment for the language, you know, with the language camps and activities to just kind of have people actively using them versus this kind of like Latin style grammatical instruction.
And our communities, the Nanticoke community, many of the Eastern Algonquin communities are considered the Lenape people to be sort of the grandfathers, the original people of this land. And our languages are of course, very similar to Lenape. Lenape itself has broadly two rough sort of categories of dialects, some people would say. You know, some of these words are not, you know, as useful for describing what, you know, how these languages operate in practice. But there's the Munsee in the north and Unami in the south. And I've been able to learn some Munsee from speakers in Canada, from the two Munsee communities in Ontario, who they've been working on their language revitalization as well. And it's been really valuable to both connect with them as, you know, these distant kin, because, you know, they're also our people, and also to learn about what they're doing with language revitalization. And one good thing about the pandemic, I don't even know if I want to say that as a phrase, but something, this rise of Zoom and being able to have online classes, because, you know, my language teacher's in Canada. And so, you know, me down here in Delaware, it would have been very hard to attend, you know, biweekly classes that would be held in Ontario. But due to the pandemic, they moved these classes online. And so now you're having people from all over being able to log in and talk to each other in the language, even if they're geographically separate. So it's also been really great to connect with other people like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. We started using Zoom, I think, a couple of years before the pandemic for teaching, because we were trying to find high fidelity options, you know. And so a lot of the kind of interfaces for having video conferences and for having some sort of class or conversation would compress the audio, because a lot of folks who are probably designing this stuff assume that everybody speaks the same language. So it's just all about like being visually pleasing and having some good interactivity and being easy to use. And so we started hunting around, and we have a great IT department at our university who are always looking for these microphone solutions and who are looking for ideas. And there was an English teacher named Kevin Meyer who said, "Have you tried this Zoom thing?" And so he's a professor at UAS. And I said, "No." And I looked at it and I said, "This is what we need." So lucky for us, when the pandemic hit, we had already been Zooming for a year or two. And so we were just sort of kind of ready to roll right into that. And then we had massive open online courses through a couple of institutions, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Outer Coast out of Sitka. And they were hosting these free online classes, and we were getting hundreds of people signing up, showing lots of interest, a lot of people coming. And so we started to try and think of strategies in terms of, okay, we got to get people interested, then we got to get them started, then we got to start breaking off these groups who are starting to really make some progress, and then just keep pushing everybody higher and higher and higher. Because we went, you know, we have an unbroken chain of speakers, but we went probably 40, 50 years without creating any speakers. And so now we're starting to get to a point where we can create them and we can start to have conversations with each other. But then even with that, we find that we have to resist the urge to switch to English so that we could explain what we were trying to say, or where there was an error or whatever. And so instead of focusing on perfection, we're always trying to just focus on communication to make sure that the language can be something of daily communication. So I loved what you were saying about, like, make it the thing that you use to talk about movies or sports or hunting or fishing or whatever people want to do. Give them the tools to do so in your language. So I guess, what about some of you both are studying hard and I think pursuing PhDs, good for both of you. That's a long, hard road. Did that. And so how is that going, and how are your studies relating to what you're trying to do in your language work?
So I'm getting towards the end of my dissertation, which is on Nanticoke historical chronology. I've meticulously analyzed the historical word lists, revised, repeat, rinse, repeat, multiple rounds of revisions, and just sending it around for coordination with other experts, getting feedback and all that. So I'm coming up towards the end of that. And But yeah, that's been the culmination of so I started the PhD program in 2015, but actually my work with the Nanticoke community, I started back in 2012. I just happened to visit the Nanticoke Museum and met with the curator, Sterling Street. And before that, so actually way back, giving a little bit more background about myself, I think might make it a little clearer about some of my motives with this. So, you know, I don't have Nanticoke ancestry. I grew up in Lansdowne, a town just outside Baltimore City. But I really started my love of languages in high school when they started offering Japanese at my high school, which was unusual because they were getting ready to get rid of all foreign language programs in the school. So Shield Sensei, she was a very important influence in my life, and I'm very grateful that she basically taught me another worldview. It was the experience of studying Japanese, learning this different language, all the values and the different worldview that it expresses, that was absolutely a transformative experience for me. And so when I continued studying Japanese during my undergraduate days, and also happened to take a course in Chinese historical phonology, which was a really, I just had this very sort of esoteric, really laser-focused interest on this historical phonology thing. It was kind of like, almost like algebra in a way, thing correspondences. Just really fascinated in just how languages evolve from ancestral forms and all. But then it was actually seeing that documentary, We Still Live Here, about the Wampanoag Project, where I thought, okay, this is really a way that I can tie together my esoteric interests to something that can really benefit people. And as you mentioned in your inaugural podcast, that we're kind of setting this table. Everyone will have a seat and share in this great meal. I think it's imperative that all Americans, that we take an active interest in one another's cultures. We endeavor to understand every group on their own terms rather than their adherence to some sort of Euro-American model of being. So that really, finding this project, that was something where I thought, that's my way where I can kind of say, I see you, I honor you, I want to do my part to help you, I want to do my part to contribute to the continued vitality of your culture, and as my fellow Americans, your well-being is important to me, and I want to see you thrive, and I want to hear what you have to say. And so this, that's really been the motive for me, that as I've been kind of sifting through all these old documents and meticulously gathering cognates, it's just that goal of kind of restoring something that was taken away that really, that's really motivated me. And I hope that I've made a contribution to something that will benefit many generations from now.
And I am not really at the end of my dissertation. I would say I'm in the latter half of it is where I'm at. I'm finishing up my field work finally. I was supposed to start it at the in 2020, but, pandemic. So I'll be starting my write-up process very soon. And my research is studying Nanticoke and Lenape sovereignty and identity, and really trying to tease apart this word sovereignty. I've even had many conversations with people about, maybe sovereignty isn't even the word that we want to use because it has so many different connotations to it. But really talking to people about, what it is to exist as a Nanticoke or a Lenape person and how we are able to be ourselves, express our culture, express our identities, and stay together as these communities. And some of that is through our language work. And some of it is through political work. And some of it is through, other different types of embodied forms of existing. And so, yeah, my work is teasing out that. I became interested in language revitalization probably... Well, as a kid, I knew that the only word I think I knew was Wanishi, which is thank you, which is a word that, one of the words that many people in the community do know. But when I went to college, and it was the first time where I got to be with other Native students from like other communities, Native people who weren't my cousins. So it was really my first opportunity to meet you know, people from all parts of Native America. And one of the classes I took was about language revitalization. And, you know, I really got to hear all these different communities talk about the different stages that their languages were in. And they were, you know, all over the board as far as, you know, some people, like people from Navajo Nation, for example, who are working on that stability right now. Right. I did know I have a Tlingit friend actually from college as well. So, but yeah, so it made me really think about what our community, like where we were at and what I could do to contribute to bring us to a stronger place. And I did a study abroad program in New Zealand, and my host family was a Maori family. And they were running a Maori immersion preschool. And so, you know, they were telling me about how they were trying to, you know, keep Maori alive and being and helping to make sure that it gets passed to the children and that the children are learning it in addition to English. And so, you know, after I graduated, I wanted to, you know, see what I could do, you know, how can I use whatever talents that I have to help our community bring it back? And I got to meet Keith, and, you know, we've been working together for a while and just, you know, really excited to bring together different people to, you know, to bring this language back to our communities. I've really been learning a little bit about, you know, teaching methods and, you know, how do you effectively teach people things? How do you connect with people? How do you teach in these non-colonial ways? You know, these are some of the things that I've been trying to learn so that, you know, I'm in a position to, you know, bring to speak our language and to bring it back to our community in a way that's going to really work for us and help us and something that we want and that we can shape. And so, yeah, still looking for more ways to be helpful, learning, trying to learn more skills and pass them on. And I will say that I'm really excited by how many, you know, how many elders are also starting to learn some of this language, because I was talking with one elder and, you know, he was saying, you know, it's very daunting to try to learn, you know, a whole nother language. However, he now introduces himself in the language. He says he uses Wanishi all the time. He can do his introduction. He knows some prayer words. He can say creator, Kishala Mokwang. Like, you know, so he has that language. And I think that, I think Heath also said it earlier, it's not as important to, or maybe it was you, I don't remember now, but sorry, it's not as important to focus on that perfection of the language, but to work on communication. Sorry, that was you. So yeah, just like really seeing how, you know, pulling some of the, like what's important to people, just being able to speak those few words, to say that short prayer to creator in the language, that's what's really important and beautiful.
Okay. Gaut kaudikit, Johan. Yeah, gidet koach to us a we're going to take another break, but before we do, I just want to say, I think another important part of decolonization is really continually analyzing everything and being very paranoid that colonial mechanisms are going to be entering into your consciousness. So being competitive, trying to be the best and trying to, well, they got this. I'm mad that they got this, right? These other, like we were messing around with our elders trying to come up with a term for like someone get something and you're jealous that they got it. And they had a really hard time because they said, we're not like that. But, you know, finally we had an elder who told me he had to sleep on it. You know, his name was Anatlahash Sam Johnston. He's one of my favorites because he'll tell you how to say all kinds of amazing stuff. But I think just continually sort of analyzing the different ways that you can sometimes get caught in a trap, and that trap will also leave you sometimes saying, okay, we're not ready, but as soon as we get ready, we're going to do the thing, where I think, just do the thing. Don't wait to get ready, because that time's not really going to come for a lot of peoples. And so if your language is already in trouble, if your language is endangered, if your language maybe doesn't have speakers right now, then you can't wait for anything. You've got to go and create changes and shifts, but you can still have a plan. You can still go. But I think, you know, we used to run into this here when we talk about building these immersion environments. Like we have a language nest now and it's beautiful. And just watching those kids and those teachers It's very difficult to do, but it can be done. But a lot of people would say, oh, we're just not ready for that. And I'd say, we're in a state of loss. We don't get more ready by just waiting for something else to change. We have to be that change. And so if you're out there, you're doing this work, you're thinking about doing this work, be positive, be productive, don't be toxic to each other, don't hurt each other, and just get in there and do it. So we'll be right back, and we'll see a few folks that maybe teach us a few things from your language so we can hear it, learn about it. Right after this ad break, Benchish.
Once I thought about a million birds all around the world sharing their songs, thinking about the ways they have lived and they're gonna live. And this is the way. Ye awe, ye kukach to sti, wu chin, yakach to glock.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. I'm excited to hear a few things from your folks' language as we start to kind of wrap up this episode, wrap up this conversation. It's been so wonderful to spend some time with you. So teach us a couple of things. Let's hear this. Let's hear your language.
So we can give you a greeting to speak to your friend. So when we started, we said, Willika Nowell, which means it's good to see you. Malika Knoll, or Nitop. You could add Nitop on the end, which is my friend. So, you know, to make it really personal, because all of you are our friends. Malika Knoll, Nitop.
Keith, you got one for us?
So, Gunavchish is Wanishi. How you say thank you in the language.
Wanishi. Gunavchish.
And usually you want to ask about somebody's well-being. When you're greeting them, you can say Kulamalasa.
One more time.
Kulamalasa. It means how are you?
Fabulous. And any parting messages for the people who are listening? Anything you want to share? Inspiration? Things you want to make sure that they know about you folks?
I will say that even if you don't speak your language today, or you're really afraid, if it seems too daunting or too big of a job, start small. Learn one word. Then learn a second one. Soon you're going to have a whole phrase. Learn to, like, simple words, like the ones that we're teaching you. Learn what those greetings are, what those words of gratitude. And start from there. And before you know it, you will be speaking your language. So don't give up. Don't be discouraged. Any of our languages can come back and can be reawoken.
Yeah, I would like to add to that yeah, definitely. I'd like to reiterate that, you know, one succeeds at language learning, even you, the goal shouldn't always be like, oh, I must absolutely be 100% fluent in this language. You know, things, you know, identity performance is important. The ability to say a few phrases in one's language, that's it's a very, you know, every single word, every phrase used in your language is a very potent statement of pride in one's identity, and also a very potent statement of resistance against assimilation. And I think that American Indian cultures, Alaska Native cultures, languages are a very integral part of our nation's patchwork, national treasures. And I think that I find it very wonderful that Native peoples are re-embracing their languages and their cultures. And I also think that it's imperative that all Americans take an active interest in that and learn as much as they can about our First Nations. And that way, I think really just taking that active interest is going to go a long way to healing wounds and just encouraging people to be who they are. I think that's of the utmost importance.
And so where can folks find you, support you? There's got to be people on the East Coast with all kinds of money. Give them some money. Build them things. Do things. Make things happen. If you're living on Indigenous lands, you better be finding a way to help Indigenous languages, or else you're just playing colonizer or tourist. And you don't want to have those roles. You want your role to be an active decolonizer, a change maker, someone who contributes to life instead of taking it away from others. Everything we're doing here is additive. We're all doing good things. So how can people find you folks and support you?
So right now, we're still working on a social media presence. We're going to need a Gen Z intern for that. But right now, we do have a dedicated email for the language work. And it's called nanticokelanguage@gmail.com. So no dots or spaces, just nanticokelanguage@gmail.com.
How do you spell that?
That is NANTICOKE, Nanticoke. And you're also welcome to, the Nanticoke Indian Tribe has a website and contact information there. So that's another way to, if you can't remember that email address or you're looking for a website to go to. Our language work doesn't specifically have a presence on the site yet. You know, something we're still building. If there's any people in that tech world out there who want to, you know, help us with that, we would love some recommendations.
Okay. Somebody get us a millennial.
No, we're millennials. We need the Gen Zers. We need the younger folks.
Oh, that's the next one, Dan. See, I think I'm Gen X, so I'm behind on all those things. But yeah, someone with some social media fluency, some web fluency, some technology. We do some work with 7,000 languages, and their headquarters are kind of close to you folks. So yeah, let's get you all some help, and let's get you all some relief, and just keep building these wonderful things And I just want to say, if you reach out to help people who are doing stuff in indigenous languages, and if you're not from that group, just stay humble, be kind, listen to people, try to pluralize. We get a lot of folks who come here and say, Alaska Native culture, Alaska Native culture. I'm like, there's so many of us. We're all different. Stop saying just a singular thing. And so, and also just be a good ally, and also stay productive and stay in tune with what the people are doing, and try not to claim anything as yours. And so as we sort of reach out for folks to come and visit with you folks and to help you all out, we want to make sure that they're coming in a good way and that they're also being additive. And my hope is that this 30-year dream where children are speaking your language and their people are telling stories in your language and people are walking around just talking about their day-to-day stuff. What they need to talk trash to each other. They need to gossip. They need to tell stories, jokes, all that good stuff. I hope it's coming in your language and that you folks are a genesis of something that is wonderful and unstoppable. So that's my wish for what's coming forward for you folks. I want to thank you for reaching out to me after listening to our podcast, Keith, and to just hanging out with us today and being awesome. So I wish you all the best, and we'll talk to you later.
Renatish Wanishi, I'm honored to speak with you today. I wish you the best of luck for your continued success.
Wanishi. Renatish.
Wanishi.
Ye goe hwan to cut you hon. Ye teeth go hasawe kanakoe hasu to wasakuya ye glaki. A joy ye quati. Ye quati. Gunachish. Your ancestors want you to succeed. Be brave. Strength is inside of you. Because they want it, it's going to happen. This has been The Tongue Unbroken, a production of the iHeartMedia Network and the Next Up Initiative. Check them out. Partition, Black Fat Femme, and Beauty Translated. Beautiful voices stepping out from the margins. This has been produced by Ian Johnson. We'll be back next week. Gunchish.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.